Well, you could say the 2018 midterm elections are officially underway, with four primary elections held yesterday in Ohio, Indiana, West Virginia, and North Carolina. In three of those states, West Virginia, Indiana, and Ohio, Republicans chose nominees who will challenge Democratic Senate incumbents later this year. Let's set these primary elections aside for just a moment. We're going to have a conversation about the resiliency of conservative values here in America on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Rick Graber is president and CEO of the Bradley Foundation. That's a private grant-making organization based in Milwaukee. He recently wrote an op-ed in The Hill. It's titled, "Beyond the Beltway, Conservatives Have Much to Applaud." Rick, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Well, before we dive in here, we are morning after now these primaries in four Republican-leaning states. What are your takeaways morning after on which Republicans got the nod to challenge Democrats in the midterms?
Well, I used to be very involved in politics in the state of Wisconsin and around the country. Now that I'm in the foundation world, we really don't and aren't allowed to comment on politics. Personally, it's going to be a very interesting election season. We're all aware of what the political environment is in this country, and it could very well be a challenging year for Republicans, but we'll see. The time between now and November is a long time in the political world. There's some key states, and the Senate map is an interesting map this year. We'll just have to see.
What prompted you to write an opinion piece that showcased the conservative mission you see in play around the country? Why now? What is the timing here?
Well, I think there's a lot of wringing of hands, of complaining, of angst. Among conservatives and others, and I think when you step back and you look at the environment and what's going on around the country, frankly, whether you're conservative or liberal, there's some things to be pleased about. There's some progress that's being made, and I can point to a couple different areas. One would be innovation. We see it here in the state of Wisconsin, particularly in the Madison area, but you see it in other places, in Ohio and Tennessee and Texas, where entrepreneurs and innovators are thriving. Our foundation, the Bradley Foundation, was founded by two brothers, Lind and Harry Bradley, and people in Wisconsin know that they were the creators of the Allen Bradley Company, and they did it through grit and determination and failure and picking themselves up. That's what entrepreneurs and innovators do, and we're seeing a lot of that, and I think part of it is due to a rollback in regulation, taking government off the backs of some of these folks, making it easier to start businesses. That's a positive step forward. It creates jobs, creates opportunity, and to me, that's hard to argue with. Go ahead.
Immediately in your writing, though, you draw this line between Washington and the rest of the country, inside the Beltway, outside the Beltway. Why do you set up this dichotomy? What's going on there?
Well, so much of the focus is on Washington. Mm. So much of the focus often is on the coast, the big cities on the coast. And part of the point I'm trying to make is that in the heartland, where we all live, there are some positive things going on, notwithstanding what's going on in Washington. People are doing things on their own without government and are succeeding. Civil society, big area of focus for the Bradley Foundation, tackling some of the really tough problems. We believe that part of what's made this country unique are strong families and neighborhoods and voluntary organizations. And it's those kind of groups, those voluntary organizations, that are tackling the tough problems in Milwaukee and around the state. Drug and alcohol abuse, helping kids out of the juvenile justice system to find the right path, setting men and women straight who are coming out of the justice system, putting them back to work. That's the kind of stuff the foundation's working on. That's the kind of stuff that's happening day to day that doesn't get reported on, doesn't get focused on in Washington or other places.
Here in Wisconsin, we're a right-to-work state. You're seeing more states go toward that trend. You point that out in your piece. But Wisconsin has a history of strong union support, and you say conservative policy really helps economic success, drives it. Why do you encourage moving away from collective bargaining?
Well, I don't think that's what we're encouraging. What we are encouraging is individual freedom, the right of workers to decide if they want to be part of a union, the right of workers to decide whether or not they want to pay union dues. If they want to, great, more power to them. But part of our Constitution is based on individual liberties, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. They ought to be able to exercise those rights. And that, at the bottom of this whole debate, is what this is all about.
Let's bring in a call now. Scott is joining us from Whitewater. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. As a progressive, I've always struggled with the definition and what is a conservative? You bring up right to work, and absolutely, people have a right to not join a union. Instead of joining a union shop making $25 or $30 an hour with benefits, they can go to the non-union shop for $15 an hour. There are non-union shops to go to. And freedom and free market is not free market when we give $4 billion in tax money to a private corporation. It's not freedom when a government decides, or they try to get the government to decide who should be married, who should not be married. We don't have religion in our politics. We now have Christianity.
So, Scott is bringing up a number of issues here. Rick Graber, unpack, if you will.
Well, I go back to the mission of the Bradley Foundation, and it really is to restore, strengthen, and protect the principles and institutions that have made this country unique and exceptional and different. And for us, that means we define it this way. Yes, we are looking for organizations that are loyal to our Constitution, and that means our system of federalism and separation of powers and individual liberties. We think in our democracy it's important to have informed and capable citizens, and that leads us to education reform, both K-12 and higher education. We do believe free markets provides the best opportunity. Economic freedom, political freedom is the best way for people and businesses to thrive, and as I mentioned, we believe in a strong civil society.
But is it hard to find a working definition for what is a conservative today in 2018?
Well, sure. I don't know. I think it's hard to precisely define what progressivism is or conservatism is. I've tried to tell you how the Bradley Foundation views it and the organizations that we're looking for to support. Appreciate Scott's points of view. I think his facts are wrong on particularly the claim that all union workers are paid more than non-union workers, but that's what's great about this country. We can have this debate, we can have this discussion in a civil way.
Let's look at unemployment numbers for a moment. Wisconsin hovering at a record low of 2.9%. That number comes from our Department of Workforce Development. First of all, is that number good on face value?
Don't know why it isn't. I think our economy is doing pretty well here in the state of Wisconsin. Whether it's 2.9 or 3.2, whatever it is, it's pretty good. There are a lot of people at work. There are a lot of jobs. There are a lot of opportunity. We're creating an environment in this state that encourages that. I think you've got to be very, very optimistic about Wisconsin right now.
Do you think it is some of those policies, conservative policies, that are driving that number?
Sure it is. Sure. These policies take time. It's a long process. I look at school choice, which is now part of the fabric of Wisconsin. That started in the mid-1980s, and that story has yet to play out completely. But the fact that parents now have more choices as to where to send their kids to school, that's a good thing. And that's good for the state of Wisconsin. We need people who have great educations, and we've got a lot of work to do there. But it's really important for our state to have those people coming up through the ranks who have the skill set to work and lead a productive life and be a productive member of society.
We're talking about conservative politics in America today with Rick Graber. He's the Bradley Foundation's CEO. That's a private grant-making organization based in Milwaukee. He recently wrote an op-ed in The Hill. It's titled, Beyond the Beltway, Conservatives Have Much to Applaud. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Where do you see conservative policies benefiting people in your community? Do you think those ideas are more important in economic standards or social policy? How can Wisconsin benefit from implementing more conservative ideals? You can call in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation with Rick Graber in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. News is next. Yesterday's primary in four states saw Republicans pick three of the 10 candidates who will take on Democratic senators in states President Trump won, and the first House incumbent go down in a primary in 2018. We're talking about the landscape of conservative values this morning after. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Bradley Foundation CEO Rick Graber stays with us. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you identify as conservative or liberal? Maybe you use a different word to describe your worldview. Have you lived in places where people looked down on conservatives? How about where people revered that perspective? Tell us about it. 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Lisa now in Cottage Grove. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thank you for being with us, Rick. I really have admired your work. I'm a conservative, leaning more independent in this coming election because I guess I'm a little tired of the lack of conservative values in Governor Walker's administration as well as President Trump's administration. And I wonder how you describe if we're supposed to give conservative policies time to work, how we can give President Trump credit for the uptick in the economy right now. Didn't he really inherit President Obama's economy? And then the second point is, why are Republicans the same as Democrats when they govern in terms of not cutting government expenditures and agencies that are kind of not even relevant anymore? If our economy is not spitting out the number of jobs, why do we still need so many different government entities supporting job creation? Because the middle class does seem to be disappearing right now. I think we can all agree on that. And then finally,
Lisa, we got to pause right there. Really good questions. Let's go to Rick Graber here because we are short on time. Go ahead, Rick.
Well, thanks, Lisa. I mean, I think your first question was, should we give Donald Trump credit for the current economy? Well, I think we've got to give him some credit for that. It's really the businesses and the people that deserve the credit, the people that are really creating jobs, which isn't government. It's industry. It's entrepreneurs. But I think his efforts on deregulation, as I said earlier, freeing up the opportunity to create businesses, to be entrepreneurial, to be an innovator, I think this government under Donald Trump is more favorable than the Obama government. I think tax reform that he pushed through is a positive step. Is it perfect? No, nothing is in a democracy, but I think it's a positive step forward to make us more competitive in this country. So, yeah, I think he deserves some credit for the progress we've seen since he's come to office. In terms of why are Republicans and Democrats seemingly the same when it comes to cutting spending, very good question, Lisa. I wish our politicians were more courageous on that. And there's some tough, tough issues we've got to face. Entitlement reform being at the very top of the list if we're going to begin to tackle the debt and deficit issues that we have in this country. In terms of the middle class being left behind, again, it's, I don't think government is necessarily the whole answer to that. It's giving people, the people in this country, the unique individuals, every single one of which is important, the opportunity to thrive. we believe on our side of things that less government, limited government, less regulation is the way to encourage and promote that. I know there are debates on that.
And Lisa said she's leaning independent because she's not seeing conservative values take shape in office, especially with Governor Walker's administration. How would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, you pointed out earlier that the unemployment in the state is 2.9%. We're seeing some great uptick in opportunity. We read this week about all the jobs that are coming because of the Foxconn situation, but that's just a piece of what's going on in the state. Sure, we need more progress on welfare, on tax reform. We've seen some innovation in welfare reform, creating a policy that's promoting long-term employment in Wisconsin. That's great, but we can do more. And if her point is we should be doing more, I agree with her.
Rick, Wisconsin has been in the national spotlight in recent years. Last year was the announcement of Foxconn building a facility in the southeastern part of the state. Congressman Paul Ryan, a former Republican nominee for vice president, current Speaker of the House, he's not running for re-election. There was Reince Priebus, former RNC chair, chief of staff at the White House. He's no longer in those roles. How does that change Wisconsin's place in the country as conservatives from the state step away from leadership?
Well, people don't stay in these jobs forever. And we had a unique experience and opportunity in Wisconsin with Governor Walker leading at the state level, with the Speaker of the House, with the Chief of Staff to the President. That's a great, great opportunity. It couldn't last, didn't last forever, and we've just got to be thankful that guys like Paul Ryan and Reince Priebus stepped up, served the public, made Wisconsin proud, and then move on with their life. That's what this country is about. It's not about career politicians. It's serving your country and then heading back to work or spending more time with your family.
The Bradley Foundation donates millions to causes and efforts that align with the organization's values. What role do you think should special interest groups play in politics today?
I'm not quite sure I'm understanding the question, the distinction between what Bradley Foundation does and so-called special interests.
But as you see groups align with candidates and the huge amount of dollars funneling through special interest groups, how does that impact conservative values, impact our politics today?
Well, I mean, I could only focus on what Bradley Foundation does, and I wouldn't call the people that we support special interests by any means. We support 501c3 organizations only. That's all we can do. So we don't get involved in campaigns. We don't get involved in lobbying. We don't do that. We're looking for organizations that have the leadership that can make a difference in the areas that I've outlined. Civil society being near the top of that, tackling the tough problems that we see in our central cities and throughout the state, rural areas, with respect to education and drug abuse and so forth. We got to try to work on those problems, and that really doesn't have anything to do with special interests and politicians.
Going back to your time as ambassador to the Czech Republic for several years until 2009, how does your international experience influence the positions you take in American politics and the programs you see going here in Wisconsin?
Well, it was a special, fun, unique opportunity to serve our country in the Czech Republic. It was incredible for me and for our family, for our kids. I think it gave me a perspective on America that I didn't have before. And you don't appreciate what's unique about this country really until you live someplace else. And to me, it does go back to some of the civil society things. There's a culture of giving, of philanthropy, of volunteerism, of neighborhood that I just didn't see living overseas for about 6 years and traveling the world subsequently. It's unique and it's special. and it has made this country different. And I think the perspectives that I drew from that experience strengthened my resolve to try to help what we're doing here in Wisconsin and Milwaukee, throughout the state, throughout the country.
Rick Graber, as we wrap up here, what is the future of conservatism in Wisconsin and beyond? What does it look like?
Political cycles come and go. The conservative philosophy is one that, as I've said several times this morning, is a long-term play. I think it's vibrant. I think it's strong. I think there's opportunity. And yes, we should debate it, but the opportunity to give individuals greater opportunity, greater dignity, greater self-respect can only result in a better state with more opportunity, more economic opportunity, more personal opportunity, and I think that's something we should all strive for. And we should look for those areas in this divide between conservatives and liberals or progressives where there is agreement, where we do have common goals, and try to find ways to work towards those ends, and then agree to disagree in the other areas.
Rick, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Kate. I enjoyed it.
That was Rick Graber. He's president and CEO of the Bradley Foundation. That's a private grant-making organization based in Milwaukee. And he recently wrote an op-ed in The Hill. It's titled, Beyond the Beltway, Conservatives Have Much to Applaud. Now let's carry this conversation over to conservative values on college campuses in America and in the classroom. Joshua Dunn chairs the Department of Political Science at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. He's also director of the Center for the Study of Government and the Individual. He's co-author of the 2016 book, Passing on the Right, Conservative Professors in the Progressive University. Josh, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Why is it important to have right-leaning professors on college campuses?
Well, I think there are a few reasons that relate to the core missions of the university. One of the primary missions is, of course, teaching. And I think that students often are not exposed to the range of ideas that they need to be exposed to if there aren't sufficient voices of different persuasions on campus. One of the concerns that conservatives have is that there's indoctrination going on campus. I think there's actually very limited evidence that attempts at indoctrination work in the classroom. But instead, what's lost is an opportunity for students to be exposed to the ideas that they need to be exposed to in order to be effective citizens in a pluralistic society. So that's one of the reasons I think it's important to have more diverse voices on campus. Another reason is research, that often important questions are not asked or they're afraid, scholars are afraid to ask them if there's not a body of other people, of people on the other side of the aisle or of different ideological persuasions to ask them. And so important questions just simply get ignored, or other research is not challenged that needs to be challenged in order to get to a closer approximation of the truth.
Do you find that it is a novelty to see an intellectual, conservative-leaning thinker on campus, a professor on campus, or guest to come to campus to discuss issues from a conservative bent?
Well, certainly conservatives are a distinct minority on campus, and that's particularly true in the social sciences and humanities. And those are, of course, the disciplines where politics cut closest to the core of the discipline. So to give you an idea, in the social sciences, only about 5% of professors are self-professed conservatives, while about 18% are, in fact, Marxist. So that gives you an idea of how much of a minority conservatives are on campus. So certainly in some disciplines, it really is a novelty to have a conservative on campus. So you think about, say, sociology, for instance, maybe one out of every 40 professors in sociology is a registered Republican. And if you use that as a proxy for their ideological persuasion, that shows you that there's not going to be a lot of conservatives there. In other disciplines, particularly economics, conservatives are much better represented. So in economics, anywhere from one quarter to a third of economics professors might self-identify as conservative.
Why might that be?
So economics is a discipline that's been profoundly shaped by neoclassical economics, and that tradition is still very, of course, strong in the discipline. I think it's actually become stronger. Also, economics is the among the social sciences, it comes closest to the hard sciences, at least in its mathematical or empirical orientation. And you also see more conservatives in the harder sciences. And so to the extent that economics looks more like a hard science, it's going to be more attractive to more conservatives.
Do you find that conservative professors on campus feel as if they have more limited opportunities compared to their more liberal colleagues?
Certainly, I think that's the case. So John Shields and I, in our book, we interviewed 153 different professors in six different disciplines, and we tried to gauge whether or not they hid their politics. We actually surveyed them. And what we found was that one-third of them actually hid their politics from their colleagues. And if you exclude economics from the sample, it was half of them. And so I think that shows you that the experiences of conservative faculty on campus are different from other faculty. Now, some faculty who hid their politics did come out after tenure. In fact, probably most of them came out after tenure. But they really did fear professional repercussions if they were open about their politics. And I don't think that you would see the same kind of fear on the left. There might be some on the left who might fear about being open about their politics in maybe based on the university or their discipline. That could be, but on the whole, it's going to be different for conservatives.
Who do you think then is putting pressure on conservative professors? Is it the institutions themselves? Are they administrators critiquing these professors more harshly? Is it colleagues or is it the students?
Well, you're primarily judged by your colleagues in the university. So getting promoted to tenure requires, first of all, the approval of colleagues in your department or in your college, and then you go up in the university and still you're going to have committees composed of faculty. So it's primarily coming from your colleagues. Some of it is simply that you have the university, which is an overwhelmingly left-leaning institution. And so it's natural for people when they're in an environment surrounded by other people who think the way that they do to make comments about people who are conservative, indicating that they think they're not intelligent or those kinds of things. We found that reported quite often in our interviews. And so that's part of it. It's just the conservative faculty pick up that their ideas aren't really welcome. But it's just people in the university making the correct assumption that most people at the university are liberal. So that's part of it. But then we also do know that many faculty are willing to discriminate based on ideological grounds. There's been research on this by several different scholars. I think most importantly, George Yancey, who's a sociologist in Texas, who surveyed scholars and found that many of them, if they knew that, for instance, someone was a registered Republican, they would be much less likely to hire them. Or if they knew that they were a self-identified conservative or evangelical, to different markers of being on the right politically, they would actively work to discriminate against them. And that's actually an unusual finding, because most of the time you have to be very tricky to get people, particularly academics, to admit that they're willing to discriminate against someone. And so in these surveys, people actually did indicate that they were willing to do this.
Josh Dunn is a self-described conservative professor. He chairs the political science department at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you a professor in a college? Do you think space exists for your worldview? Or is higher education more accepting of certain viewpoints? Are you a student with those concerns? What role should personal politics play in academia? Should students be able to discern a professor's stance? Call in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back after a news update on the Ideas Network. The University of Colorado Boulder has made an effort to diversify intellectual conversations on its campus, seeking out highly visible scholars who are conservative thinking and have conservative policy-making histories or both of those things. We're checking in on the state of being a conservative professor on a college campus here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Josh Dunn is our guide. He chairs the political science department at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, and he would label himself as a conservative professor. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you celebrate about the conservative movement? Which tenet of your beliefs do more liberal friends or colleagues overlook? And how do you think your perspective on issues could improve your community? You can call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Todd now, joining us from Janesville. Hi, Todd.
Hi, good morning. I just have a question, kind of playing devil's advocate with our leadership, like Scott Walker, talking about how college education is really not that important anymore in the workplace or intellectual thinking. Why would we be looking for more conservatives to be in the university system?
Todd, thanks for the question. I think Todd is referring to here Governor Scott Walker, who has been very focused on jobs, trying to train people in the workforce, getting them into the workforce very quickly. And also, Todd may be also referencing cuts to higher education here.
So I think that there are a couple of things that could be said here. One, the concern about the, say, overselling of higher education isn't purely a conservative one. You've actually seen people in both parties, including President Obama, talk about how we need to focus on more practical disciplines. Now, I personally am not certain of that. I'm just reporting what others and political office have said. So, for instance, President Obama made a crack about maybe we have too many art history majors. I think this is around 2014 mm-hmm. or so. So this isn't necessarily something that's just limited to conservatives. I do think that conservatives, at least some of the attacks on the university by conservatives are misguided. So, for instance, tenure is often attacked by those on the right. But if tenure is going to protect anyone, it's going to protect ideological minorities like conservatives. And I can, from what we found in our research for our book, tenure ended up being very important for conservatives to actually be able to feel free to express themselves and be more open about their politics. So I think that many conservative faculty would disagree with some of the more popular critiques of the university that are out there.
Josh Dunn, should we be talking about right-of-center professors? Are instructors bringing their own political convictions into the classroom? And should we be okay with that?
So I think there's no doubt that at least many professors are quite open about their politics. And some classes are, in fact, designed with something looking like a political agenda. I think that most of the faculty that we interviewed were opposed to the idea that the professor's personal politics should play a significant role in their teaching. In fact, many of them indicated that the way that they were outed by their students as a conservative was in the fact that the students couldn't discern what their politics were. So students would come to them and say, well, we couldn't figure out if you're conservative or liberal, so we had to assume you're a conservative. And that was reported over and over to us.
This real appetite to place labels on professors.
Yes, students would pick up on this. And there's been other research. There's a survey of University of Colorado students that showed that conservative students felt less willing to be open about their politics in class, which indicated that they were picking up things from their professors, indicating that their professors weren't open to having alternative viewpoints expressed in class. So I think there is some evidence for this. But in the general question about whether or not the professor's politics should play a role, I think it does sometimes depend on the professor. I think that there's some professors who can be very open about their politics, but nevertheless still create an open and more inclusive environment for students to be able to express themselves. But then others are not going to be, and they'll use the platform as a way of silencing dissent in the classroom. So I think it really often does come down to how the professor handles it, him or herself.
Let's go to David now, joining us from South Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hi. Just a quick framing of the discussion a little bit. I'm 67. I started paying attention pretty much as a kid in 1960, following along with these issues. My politics pretty much aligned with Richard Nixon, absent the Vietnam War. He believed in the New Deal and the basic ability of government to improve the daily nature of regular people. And I'm a flaming liberal. You know, I have clean air, clean water, balanced book. But when my young woman gets pregnant, I want to take prenatal care. I want to even take care of the baby after it's born. And that makes me a what? People keep telling me that I've moved so far to the left. Like, I used to have an agenda. I forgot it because I've been, fighting for the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment, the right of anyone to marry anybody, which is pretty much a conservative right, a liberal right, a human right. So the whole conversation is, at least for me, it's drifted so far off. I'm the conservative, at least back in 1960 and 1970. Mm. And the rest of these guys, where are you?
Does
government have a role of improving the daily life of regular people?
David, thank you. Josh Dunn, improving the life of everyday people.
Certainly. Well, I think that conservatives today would say that the best way to help the lives of ordinary people is to, in fact, free them, to allow them to use their talents and their abilities by limiting government interference. So certainly when that comes to the economy, that's a fair, almost universal conservative position. There are some conservatives who would dissent from that. But by and large, that would be the conservative position. That the argument is that if you look at the evidence on government attempts to help people, they often those attempts aren't very effective. They would look at, say, welfare reform, which was after all signed by Bill Clinton, and there were predictions that would lead to mass starvation and people, more and more homeless people on the streets. And, Bill Clinton, I think, would argue that it was one of the greatest successes of his presidency. And, of course, the impetus for welfare reform came right there from Wisconsin, from a conservative governor. So I think that would be the conservative position. To the general point about how politics perhaps has shifted over time, I think there's no doubt about that. I remember one professor that we interviewed who said, well, I was a Kennedy Democrat, a John F. Kennedy Democrat, and so that means I have to be a Republican today. Mm. Because if you actually look at Kennedy, much of what he stood for were deeply conservative principles. He was the one, he was pushing a significant tax cut in the early 1960s. He was an ardent cold warrior. So once again, these labels do sometimes shift over time.
Let's squeeze in one more call here. Bill in Galesville is waiting. Bill, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. Go ahead.
Well, I have a kind of an explanation for why conservatives always believe that universities are indoctrinating students with a liberal perspective. And that's because basically in high school, which is really controlled by local school boards, all students get exposed to is what we would call an internal locus of control perspective on human behavior. And that is that what causes people to behave the way they do is internal to them. It's their personality, it's their chemistry, it's their biology. And those are the courses that students take in high school. They'll get exposed to psychology, chemistry, and biology. Almost no high schools have a sociology course or curriculum. When they get to the university, they start taking sciences that are have a perspective of an external locus of control for human behavior. That is, the reason people behave the way they do is because of external social forces. So what causes poverty isn't laziness or the biology of the people who are poor. Instead, it's education or economic opportunities. And, of course, that's a much more liberal perspective.
And Josh, because we're short on time, let's get Josh to respond here.
Sure. Well, yeah, there's a huge debate about his argument that all of these things are these other things are causing problems, and you know we don't have time to I think sort all of that out here. I mean I would just say there are a lot of people who have looked at this very closely who would strongly disagree and say there's substantial evidence that shows that some of the things that he's discounting as causing poverty actually are significant contributing factors, but there is this general agreement that opportunity certainly does matter, and so that's what I think there is some consensus on that you do need to create opportunity for people. The question and the disagreement is over how you do that.
How do we incorporate more conservatism on campus in a way that benefits everyone?
Certainly. So I think that you can do things like the program at the University of Colorado at Boulder, where you can bring in faculty for a year. I think that program has been fairly effective. It's all privately funded, and I think that's helpful as well, because one of the things that conservatives do oppose is the idea of affirmative action for conservatives. They're just deeply, I think there's just a visceral reaction against affirmative action, even for themselves. And so we ask faculty about that. So I don't think that's an option. But I think there are certain things that campuses can do. So they could, for instance, in some departments, they could try to expand the range of searches for different departments, so that the areas where conservatives might have more of an interest, there might be an opportunity to find someone. It's that you don't hire someone because of their ideology, but say, for instance, history. In history, the study of war has actually fallen deeply out of favor. But this is, of course, important for understanding history. And mm-hmm. So you could imagine a department creating a position in military history that where you would be more likely to find conservatives. Not just that conservatives are interested in it, but they're going to be more interested in it on average than liberals are. So you can do things like that.
And perfect. We have to pause there. Josh, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for your time.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Joshua Dunn is chair of the Department of Political Science at the University of Colorado in Colorado Springs. He's also director of the Center for the Study of Government and the Individual, co-author of the book Passing on the Right. Earlier, we talked with Rick Graber, CEO of the Bradley Foundation. This hour was produced by Keely Baltina and Cheryl Gasser. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.